Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to
11. 11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard. Boxed Up here for a Thursday night or a Friday morning or a Friday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. And tonight, we have a little bit of a break in the current Billy Shears series. Billy had a previous engagement this week, so we'll probably get segment two of Lennon on Dylan next week. So I figured today, I originally had this a track lined up for today that was given to me by my neighbor, Tel, who is known as Juggernaut in the chat room. And it ends up kind of fitting into this vibe of what Bob was talking about earlier. This, you know, all this hubbub about Obama's speech and, you know, being bilingual and all that kind of thing. And whoever that jackass that was that Bob was playing earlier, sitting on, nothing good's ever been written in Illegal Immigrant. And as you can imagine, that got me a little bit, well, upset. Because, well, just because. To hear someone make statements like nothing's... Oh, it was G. Gordon Liddy. Oh, right. Okay, you know. Jackass extraordinaire right there. You know, crook. Treasonous person. But, so, I've got a couple of other tracks lined up. Things that are not sung in English that I really, really dig. But the first track I'm going to play, though, was the original track of the day that I had laid out. And this is from this band, Ozzo Motley. Now, for those of you that are familiar with Michael Ferranti and Spearhead, Michael rates these guys as one of his favorite bands of a similar vein to himself. And these guys bring together heaps. Now, this track is in English, but... the first track I'm going to play. This is in English. It's a bit of a rappy thing, but I'll just read from their about page. You can find them at ozomatli.com, O-Z-O-M-A-T-L-I.com. And they have a little thing here saying, Ozomatli version 12.0. On the surface, nothing's changed. It's the same core lineup, the same oppositional politics, the same live shows that erupt into drumline-blessed community parties, and the same devotion to polyglot urban sound clashing. But here's what's new. After 12 years of collaborative songwriting, 12 years of constant touring everywhere from Denver to Tokyo to Sydney, 12 years of supporting anti-war mobilizations and global human rights movements, 12 years of pioneering Spanish-English mashups of hip-hop, salsa, cumbia, dub, and Middle Eastern funk, and most importantly, 12 years of facing up to internal battles and personal struggles, they've emerged anew with their fourth full-length album, Don't Mess with the Dragon, the band's most cohesive, polished, and joyous record to date. Now, the track I'm going to play, I think, is from their debut, the self-titled debut, called Ozomatli. And this is a track called Super Bowl Sunday, but Sunday spelled with an A-E, like, you know, ice cream Sunday. And just check out and, you know, make a little mental list of how many international, you know, musical influences appear in one song. This track has it all. It has tablas. It has a-go-go bells. It has mariachi-sounding horns. It has it all. And this was the first track that Juggle, and he's just popped into the chat room. This is the first track that, you know, when I got the CD and he was bugging me, have you listened to it yet? Have you listened to it yet? And I'm like, I'm getting there. So he said, you got to listen to track 8. Start there. And so this is track 8. This is just groovy. You're going to dig this. Kick back. It's going to take you places that you just didn't expect. So here is off of Ozomatli, the album Ozomatli, Super Bowl Sunday. Roll it, Bob.
Yeah. shots, cause a brother gotcha. If I prosper, shrimp and lobster on my dock like a lobster. Giving shouts to states to sustain my stature. Ultimately, ain't no gimmick behind the way that I'm designing my rhyme line for line. You'll find in your neighborhood there's a flavor flood. Whether you're a ghetto star or if your name is Mud, I speak the truth rather courageously, and I act rather contagiously when the stage is free. The rage in me's contained, now they got me. Charlie Tuna Fish and Oso Motley. Hey.
Just awesome. That is just some of the most incredible stuff. I mean, what isn't there? And now I'm going to follow it up. Now we're going to actually get into the other tracks that I picked today. Because this whole thing about language really, really angered me. And this is coming from a guy who has barely mastered the English language. And those folks that are bilingual, I think, just have such an amazing step up from those of us that, you know, struggle to just deal with one language. So along the lines of, you know, screw you, G. Gordon Liddy, you traitorous bastard. The track that follows Super Bowl Sunday on that Oz and Motley record is this is a great track. It's called Aquí No Será. And this is where, as Juggernaut described to me, this immense, large Mexican gentleman is the guy who has this falsetto voice that you're going to hear here. And it just made me think, like, you know, the Mexican Aaron Neville, you know, because Aaron Neville is this enormous monster of a guy who has the most pristine, beautiful falsetto you've ever heard. And, you know, it's kind of visually in the sound juxtaposed, kind of throw you a bit the first time you catch on to it. But this reminds me of living in San Antonio, Texas. I think this is gorgeous. There's not much else to say, but just to kick back and listen to this. This is the same band. Oz and Motley with Aquí No Será. Roll it, Bob.
Las Malvinas, hasta la misión.
I mean, same band. And that's actually how it plays on the album. Because straight, that's the order. I mean, just those guitars. I mean, that's some serious nylon playing, and possibly, you know, it could even be catgut. and Bob's asking me if I looked up an English translation to Aquí No Será, and I didn't. So I'm not really sure what it might mean. If someone wants to look it up for me, it would be really, really cool. But we're going to move on to something else. Yeah, some serious fingernails on that player, and he's pulling on those strings. That was no light playing, and I guarantee those were some serious high tension strings. You may, those of you that have been around the network for a while, back in the early days when Bruce and I were still doing Fourth Estate Radio, and we had the lecture series going on, the guy that I was doing the lecture series with on the Sydney end, writer and journalist Rodrigo Acuña, gave me this album from a band called Grupo Madera. And this is a Central American band. And Rodrigo was actually doing the lecture one night. He went and did his doctorate thesis on the revolutions in Central America over the last few years. And he interviewed, you know, Chavez, you know, Perez, all of them. You know, he was all over the place, got face-to-face with these guys. And the track I'm about to play, it's a track called Ooh-Ah, Chavez No Se Va. And it translates to Ooh-Ah, Chavez Won't Go. And this song became the unofficial rally cry of Chavez's supporters in Venezuela. And this, again, you know, for that asshole G. Gordon Liddy. You say nothing good's ever been written in anything but English? Screw you son of a bitch, because you are so wrong and so closed off. This wouldn't be possible in English. because it's not American, it's not European. It comes from somewhere else, and it is just as viable as anything else. And I'll tell you, like, I sent Bob that police track during his show, and I reckon French is one of the greatest rock and roll languages. If you've ever seen on YouTube, like, original French rock and punk bands, they're amazing. And the language just works so well musically. I think better than English many times. But anyway, this is just fun. And you can probably imagine, you know, the indigenous populations of Venezuela out on the streets singing this song. And it's been known to break out just kind of out of nowhere. So, Grupo Madera with Ooh-Ah, Chavez No Se Va. Roll it, Bob.
Ooh-Ah, Chavez No Se Va. Ooh-Ah, Chavez No Se Va.
Es un presidente bueno. venezolano, latinoamericano, pertenezco a este comando táctico de ideas y principios bien formados, con alicate en mano, tu mando paro, soy tu famaro, perteneciente de la tierra del sol amado, no me voy mi hermano, es mi tierra y es mi ocaso, y aquí me quedo con el madera, one more time,
just killer.
Ooh, ah.
Yeah. I think I almost strained my producer. I think the infection hit him and he's been bouncing all over the studio. And he says, Liddy can keep his F in Lawrence Welk. Bingo, baby, bingo. Now, to round out this little screw you, G. Gordon set list, what a way to round out the week and kind of burn out half a show. We'll go with a good American band. See, American bands understand that Spanish is a huge part of the American culture. Funny that. You know, when this whole thing first came up, I was reminded of an old Howie Mandel skit where he tells this gag about his grandmother in an elevator and, like, surrounded by all these, like, suits having a chat session, and she turns around in the middle of the elevator and screams at them in the best English she could come up with, saying, "You live in America! Speak Spanish!" And I kind of buy into that a bit, considering, you know, most of Texas was Mexico! Just a little minor fact there, you know. But anyway, one of my favorite bands, out of California, Sublime, just a great track in Spanish. Now, I didn't even try to go and translate this because, well, sometimes Sublime lyrics can be a little dirty, raunchy, or otherwise. So if, you can go look it up on your own. Chica Mi Tipo off of the Sublime record. This is just great fun. Play it, Bob.
Cuando empecemos, no me dio cuenta.
Gotta love Sublime, the best of like punk, ska, reggae, and yeah, I just, one of my favorite bands of all time. Unfortunately, another one of those musicians that I've always loved who fell to bloody smack. I still haven't quite figured out what it is about me being drawn to musicians that have had smack problems. For someone who actually is never fallen down that road. And I always just wonder if it's one of those things, you know, for the grace of the flying spaghetti monster go I. So, you know, the guy from Sublime, you know, the singer from Alice in Chains, Mother Love Bone, all these guys. And we unfortunately end up losing them all too soon. And, you know, I was actually having a chat about this with Juggle the other day. And, you know, what is it about these guys that, you know, write usually lyrics that are really kind of community-oriented and, you know, just, I don't know, bit peaceful, you know, that whole kind of love thing? And why is it they turn to this? And is it because they have, you know, such a feeling soul and the world is so just god-awful that they can't cope and they fall into this? I don't know. It's just something that I've always kind of tried to work out in my own little head and never quite gotten it worked out. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that little, you know, Get Bent G. Gordon set list. We might extend this next week. I think Juggle's got some French rap for me, which we'll have to check out. But I came across this story today at the Huffington Post, and this cracked me up. I thought this was just great. Two of my favorite people in entertainment. I just love this. Bill Nye, the Science Guy. Now, this shows you what a geek I am. Bill Nye's show, you know, first popped up. I was no longer a kid, but I'd get up on Saturday and watch it. I just thought it was so cool. And, you know, Bill Nye is a guy that has spent his life trying to make science cool. And I dig him. And then there's Ed Begley Jr., who has been a green activist and you know, an environmental guy for a long time. And these guys are they're neighbors now. And they're having a little bit of a friendly competition. And this story at the Huffington Post, Bill Nye, Ed Begley compete to see who's greener. Now, this isn't like some nasty thing. This is turned into a little bit of fun. And I just thought this was great. So check this out. On a tree-lined corner of Studio City filled with modest homes, flower gardens, and neighbors who chat across back fences, two wiry celebrities are engaged in a green grudge match. The good-natured competition between actor Ed Begley Jr. and Bill Nye, the host of the educational series Bill Nye the Science Guy, began when Nye moved into the neighborhood 2 years ago. Since then, the two moderately famous and slightly geeky environmentalists have matched wits over whose home can leave a smaller carbon footprint. I think this is great. Neighbor Freema Rude, 83, who lives between the two houses, said the competition started the day after Bill moved into the neighborhood. Bill announced it. I'm going to best Ed Begley at his own game. Oing, I'm going to get him, she recalled. He ordered panels for the garage, then rain barrels, and then had his windows done, and he put in a vegetable garden. Nye, 52, pins the source of the rivalry on on Bagley, who became envious of Nye's new solar panels when filming a segment of his HGTV Green Living show called Living with Ed. Ed instantly got a little twinge. You could see it, Nye said. My system, being 15 years younger, had a couple of nice little features that he doesn't have. This is just so much better than, you know, my SUV's bigger than your SUV. To liven up the segment, the neighbors pretend to spar over who had the better system. But in the city where the rich and famous jockey to be the first behind the wheel of a new alternative fuel car, the jokes are given way to an environmental turf war. Nye trumped Bagley's old solar panels with a system that shows when he's making more power than he's using. Bagley pushed to offset his wife's 20-minute showers with rain barrels to water the plants. Bagley long ago installed an AstroTurf lawn to save on water. He composts his garbage, cooks in an outdoor solar oven, and grows his own produce. His sprinkler system electronically checks the forecast and shuts down if it's supposed to rain. Instead of using pesticides, Bagley lures slugs and snails away from his plants and with trays of beer that kill them. Nye, who also has plots overflowing produce, kept raccoons away with an electric fence powered by a matchbox-sized solar panel. I want to see this program. I hope I can find it somewhere here. I think this is just genius. The white picket fence that surrounds Bagley's two-bedroom, 1,585-square-foot bungalow is made of recycled plastic milk cartons pressed into boards. Nye used the recycled plastic lumber to build a patio cover and convinced Rude to use the same type of boards to repair her shared white fence. When Bagley calls the rivalry a friendly, humorous one-upmanship, he admits there are parts of the competition that are quite serious. He has these great copper rain gutters that I covet, Bagley said. Thou shalt not covet my neighbor's gutters. Given Bagley's 20-year head start, Nye admits that he may never fully catch up to his neighbor, who has been green long before it was considered cool. Nye has called Bagley the inspiration behind many of the changes he's made, including illuminating his American flag at night with a light bulb powered by a tiny solar panel. Bagley's daughter Amanda still remembers the days when her friends thought her father was a nut. His early electric car would start puttering out of energy as it climbed hills, and would ask his daughter's friends, self-conscious teenage girls, how much they weighed. Now it's difficult, as said Amanda Bagley, now 30. He went from being the kookiest guy around to the cool guy that everyone's calling and asking questions about things instead of just thinking, you know, that he was out of his mind. These days, Bagley has his own all-purpose biodegradable cleaner called Bagley's Best, and it's regularly approached by inventors to test new products. Nye remains confidently in the lead in terms of aesthetics and order. Bagley has wires poking out of appliances, bricks piled high, and red rain barrels are an eyesore against the actor's blue home, Nye said. Ed claims, and this is an extraordinary claim, that he doesn't care how things look as long as they function well. Nye said, I'm not in that camp. Things have to look good or don't bother. Bagley said his wife is not a fan of the barrels either. He admitted the barrels were unattractive, but claims he didn't know they came in different colors and styles. Bagley has since settled on a new plan that should be acceptable to his wife, an underground cistern to store the water. More importantly, does he think his latest innovation will make Nye jealous? He already is, Bagley said. I love it. I love it. I just absolutely love it. And, you know, Ed Bagley has, you know, he really has been at the forefront of alternative energies and what we've been doing to our planet, you know, long before it was cool. And these are the people that I actually consider, you know, in some form, you know, heroes, because they did this stuff before it was cool. If you ever have a chance, go to the Australian ABC's website, abc.net.au, and check out a program called Gardening Australia. And the old guy that hosts it, he's about to finish up his run, is another one that I think is a hero, because this guy has been preaching growing organic and his whole program and the magazine and everything for decades. Peter Kundle is his name. He's a lovely man. And, you know, these people that did it before it was cool, that saw the writing on the wall, these people deserve a lot of credit. And Bill Nye, I think, is just cool. I mean, there was that story a couple months ago where he got thrown out from, you know, some school when he was giving a graduation speech, and he talked about the Earth being, you know, really old, and the fundamentalists all went, "Hey, is God trying to say that the Earth is older than 6,000 years old? We got to get him out of here. He's talking about science." Bill Nye, the science guy, and he's been making cameos on Numbers. Yes, another geeky program that I like to watch. Yes. The old rock dog is a big-time geek, and I have no problem admitting that. But anyway, I think that's great. So, you know, I'd like to see this the same kind of thing happening in with non-famous people, you know. Who can out-green the other? What a healthy competition. How cool. I think it's brilliant. But, moving on, I didn't get... I mentioned yesterday about Darth Chaney, you know, pulling a whole bunch of the health effects of global warming out of U.S. environmental case studies. Well, if you just didn't have enough reason to really despise George W. Bush for just being a shitty human being, I mean a shitty human being. Now, you know, we all know that there was just the G8 summit and, like, nothing done about climate change. And you can tell that the Germans and the Japanese are all, like, just looking, sitting there going, "Oh, once we get rid of this moron, we might actually be able to do something." Well, here's how George Bush leaves the G8. And this is out of the Telegraph. Gail sent this to me, and I saw it a couple of other places. It says, "The American leader, who has been condemned throughout his presidency for failing to tackle climate change, ended a private meeting with the words, 'Goodbye from the world's biggest polluter.' He then punched the air while grinning wildly as the rest of those present, including Gordon Brown and Nicolas Sarkozy, looked in shock. Mr. Bush, whose second and final term as president ends at the end of the year, then left the meeting at the Windsor Hotel in Hokkaido, where the leaders of the world's richest nations had been discussing new targets to cut carbon emissions. One official who witnessed the extraordinary scene said afterwards, 'Everyone was surprised that he was making a joke about America's record on pollution.' Mr. Bush also faced criticism at the summit after Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian prime minister, was described in the White House press pack given to the journalist as one of the most controversial leaders in the history of a country known for government corruption and vice." The White House, oh my God, talk about the kettle and the black and that whole thing. The White House apologized for what it called sloppy work and said the official had simply lifted the characterization from the internet without reading it. Without reading it. Oh, this is good. Concluding the three-day event, leaders from the G8 and developing countries proclaimed a shared vision on climate change. However, they failed to bridge differences between rich and emerging nations on curbing emissions. I mean, if I had been Merkel, I would have turned around and belted him. Because being a woman, she could have gotten away with it. I would have just turned around and said, "You frickin' son of a bitch, you piece of shite. Whack! How dare you?" And this is the same guy that a few months ago says, "We're leading the world." The guy lies through his fucking teeth so much. It just absolutely gives me the shits when I hear this stuff, but it just shows the absolute lack of frickin' concern that this asshole has for anyone else aside from the people that he works for to maintain their goddamn profits. It just shows you the audacity of the son of a bitch and the people around him. Piece of shit does not even closely describe the little asshole. It's amazing how one little piece of shit can throw the whole rest of the planet throwing their hands up going, "We're trying." Bob's telling me to breathe. But, I mean, I'm just reading this, Bob, and it just absolutely does my head in. You know, it's lying in the face of every single person on this planet. And so if the guy has been so full of shit about this, what would make you think that he'd even try and tell the truth when it comes to a war that's going to score more oil? I mean, really, if you're not pissed off, you're just not paying attention. ELO mentions the Wilkin Ice Shelf. It's hanging on by, like, a thread to the landmass. And that's scary. That is scary. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible how one just woeful excuse for a human being can put money, profit, and his cronies in front of everything. The sanctity of this planet, people's civil rights, the rule of law, privacy, you know, the list goes on and on. It's amazing how one story can just completely change your mood, right, Bob? You know, I just, here we played all that fun music. Now I gotta go and cover crap like this. But it's no surprise, you know, it's as though, you know, he's on his way out and the facade's starting to fall, you know.
Fooled you, didn't I?
Bastard. But as ELO is mentioning in the chat, here from Raw Story, I guess from Agence France-Presse. New evidence has emerged that a large plate of floating ice shelf attached to Antarctica is breaking up. In a troubling sign of global warming, the European Space Agency said on Thursday, images taken by the Envisat remote sensing satellite show that Wilkin's ice shelf is hanging by its last thread to Charcot Island, one of the plate's key anchors to the Antarctic Peninsula. Since the connection to the island helped stabilize the ice shelf, it's likely that the breakup of the bridge will put the remainder of the ice shelf at risk, it said. Wilkin's ice shelf had been stable for most of the last century, covering around 16,000 square kilometers, or 6,000 square miles, or about the size of Northern Ireland, before it began to retreat in the 90s. Since then, several large areas have broken away, and two big break-offs this year left only a narrow ice bridge about 2.7 kilometers wide, 1.7 miles, to connect the shelf to the Charcot and nearby Letady Island. The latest images taken by Envisat's radar say fractures have now opened up in this bridge, and adjacent areas of the plate are disintegrating, creating large icebergs. Scientists are puzzled and concerned by the event. The Antarctic Peninsula, the tongue of land that juts northward from the White Continents towards South America, has had one of the highest rates of warming anywhere in the world in recent decades. But this latest stage of the breakup occurred during the Southern Hemisphere's winter, when atmosphere temperatures are at their lowest. One idea is that the warmer water from the Southern Oceans is reaching the underside of the ice shelf and thinning it rapidly from underneath. Wilkin's ice shelf is most recently in a long and growing list of ice shelves on the Antarctic Peninsula that are responding to the rapid warming that has occurred in this area over the last 50 years. Current events are showing that we are being too conservative when we made the predictions in the early 1990s that Wilkin's ice shelf would be lost within 30 years. The truth is it's going to be more quickly than we guessed. In the past three decades, six Antarctic ice shelves have collapsed completely. Prince Gustav Channel, Larsen Inlet, Larsen A, Larsen B, Wardy, Muller, and the Jones Ice Shelf. You know, these are the things that you have to have handy when you run into, you know, one of those denier people like David was talking about on the program last night. you know, you got to go, you got to say, okay, yeah, we had a cold snap during the winter, but you got to look at the grander scale of what's going on. It's not about week to week. We're talking over decades. And this is so much, you know, a similar thread to our problems in the world and in the United States. Any planning or any, you know, just anything that's done about anything is fought in these 3 or 4 or 8 year terms. And it's just too small. It's too narrow. It's too narrow for issues like this. And issues like peak oil, you know, I mean, this is something that's been, you know, coming for decades, and now that we're hitting it, it's just going to continue to accelerate over the next few decades. But yet, in the news, all we hear about is the differences between oil. Oh, you know, oh, oil dropped $5 a barrel from when it was last week. Yeah, but last week, it had jumped up 20. And so the shell game continues as we manage to still not have the conversations that we need to have. And I'm starting to hear talk about that crap cold liquids here in Australia. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, the insanity is spreading. You know, hearing them go, oh, we'll make coal into, you know, and it burns cleaner than petrol. Hey, but they don't talk about the manufacturing process and the millions of liters of water that'll never be reclaimed and how much carbon it takes to actually manufacture the stuff. You know, I start hearing this kind of stuff over here and I'm thinking, oh my, the lobbyists have hit. They've hit Canberra. You know, we got a lot of coal. I'm glad I buy durable microphones, or else I'd spend a whole lot of money. Fission in the chat room makes a comment about, you know, one of the reasons why people just don't know what's going on is because they listen to Fox News, and Lottie responds, isn't Fox the comedy channel? Yeah, it should be. Unfortunately, the big joke is on us. Because, unfortunately, there's a whole bunch of people that go, I heard it on Fox, eh? I heard that Obama was a Muslim. Or could be. Maybe. Some say. Yeah, this is one of my favorites. Some say. That happens in the environmental debate, you know. You can go down all the, you know, all the peer-reviewed science. And then out comes that line. Some say. Oh, yeah? Who's that some? You? Mr. Talking Head? Or you and that mouse asshole fake scientist that Exxon bought to come on your network to push their crap so you can go to a commercial break that plugs fossil fuels? So, you know, I sometimes understand why, you know, people drink heavily. Sometimes think it's the only way to survive just dealing with all of this. You know, I mean, and you know, we're starting to get up on the end of things, and you know, next week, we're gonna be right in the middle of World Youth Day. What will it be? My Tuesday show for you folks will be on day one of World Youth Day here. I imagine there'll be some news. It'll be, it could be very, very much fun. Expecting some nonsense from the Chaser. Yay, 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 boys. Go for it. Wreak havoc. And I saw people already going out and selling T-shirts in the city yesterday hanging them on the fence of a local church. And the one T-shirt that I said, the Pope is wrong, put a condom on. And I wonder if these are the people, if those are the kind of T-shirts that are going to get them done for being, quote-unquote, annoying to these people. Oh, yeah, and in fact, when I've talked about some of the bizarre draconian laws that have been brought down for this World Youth Day thing, where you're not allowed to annoy, civil rights attorneys were actually taking a case to the courts to be heard today on the reality that these laws have turned New South Wales and Sydney into a police state, and that these laws are unconstitutional. They are flat out unconstitutional. We are being forced to respect someone else's delusion en masse, and our state government is throwing tons of money at them to have them come here. It could be ugly next week because they have prodded people. And as I've said before, there's a whole lot of people who weren't thinking of protesting before, but now that all this, you know, really vague, discretionary, annoyance law stuff has come down, there are going to be a whole lot of people from all walks of life down there intentionally being annoying. And my hat goes off to them. In fact, I know a few people that are seriously considering going down and attempting to get arrested because if these laws aren't repealed, they want to have them tested in court because it is pretty well believed that they're utterly unconstitutional. So anyway, folks, I do believe we're coming up on the end of things. I have to thank my good neighbor, Juggalnaut, for the Ozzy Motley tracks from today. Fantastic stuff. Fantastic stuff. Check them out. OzzyMotley.com. OzzyMatli. Fantastic. That album was the self-titled album. There's other stuff there. Grupo Madeira. You can find them on the web as well. There's even a video clip for that Chavez song. So anyway, folks, thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today as per usual. We'll have Billy Shears, I think, next week. Thanks to CRMW.net, Cold River Mountain Watch. You too can be part of the fight against mountaintop removal mining. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat and I went in to ask him why. Everybody knows.